Hello, everyone, and welcome to Total Football Debate podcast episode 44. It is myself and Cossie this week. Cookie is still sailing high on the other side of the pond, enjoying Universal Studios and all that malarkey. And Jason, on the other hand, is currently sitting on, I'm sure, a very cold seat at Selhurst, where his team, after half hour, are currently spanking Cookie's beloved Arsenal. I can tell you, I've already communicated with Cookie, not that I was eager to or anything, and let's just say he didn't think anything could dampen his Florida spirits, but he would be wrong. Yes.
Well, there's a couple of things that's dampening it as well, because apparently people have been talking about Norwich City over there because of the sponsorship with JD. So,
well, not only would that be pissing him off, but it doesn't look like the yellow kits are doing his own team much luck at the moment, because currently, and I take no pleasure whatsoever in saying this, Cookie, so I'm sorry if it comes across in any way like I'm excited or anything like that, but I'm really not. But it's currently Crystal Palace 2, Arsenal 0 on 30 minutes. What is going on? I'm sure Jason cannot wait for next week to sing We've Got Patrick Vieira songs again. And one thing I'm sure that would be rubbing Arsenal the wrong way is he made no intention of hiding his celebrations, did he, when they scored? Oh, dear.
Good on him.
So, yep. At the end of the day, Palace are his team now.
It's not that much different with Jason, because usually he's obviously quite excited because he's on Tinder whilst doing the show, and tonight he's excited for a different kind. So it's the same conclusion, but a different excitement, isn't it?
Exactly. So we will keep in touch with the Arsenal game, I'm sure. It's got 15 minutes till half time, so we will no doubt keep an eye on that. And obviously, if any goals go in, we will also jump over. But we are back to footballing ways this week. The matches are back on our TVs. No, unfortunately, there is no King of the Wheel this week or for the short-term foreseeable future until the international break. Who would have thought that Cossie would be looking forward to an international break again to defend his King of the Wheel title, eh?
Mate, that quiz, people need to get on that. Like, in my head, I had like, oh yeah, okay, this is going to be good. There's certain questions that you expect, but it was better. It was so much better than what I would have thought. So much better. It got me thinking. And to hear Jason talk about RB Leipzig in the top 50 or whatever he had to name, and ended up going on an absolute whimper with a terrible selection. Oh, it was bittersweet. And then the penalty shoot at the end. Oh, brilliant. People need to get on that.
It was very good. Very, very good. Super. It will return for sure. It is definitely something that will return. And you will defend. Thank you very much. And you will be defending your King of the Wheel title, I'm sure, sometime in the future. I don't think Jason will let it last. But unfortunately, football is back. Who would have thought?
To be fair, you know what? I couldn't even tell you the England score against Ivory Coast the other day. I had that little interest in it. It's been busy with work, etc. But believe me, any games, regardless of how busy my work is, I keep a second eye on. I make sure I catch up. I couldn't even tell you the score. I couldn't even tell you who scored. I couldn't even tell you if we won or lost. I have no interest whatsoever.
No, we will definitely be all over England come the World Cup as it gets nearer. Course. But for the time being, yeah, keep going Premier League. That's all we want. You know the drill. First segment, televised games. Middle segment, predictions. End segment, non-televised and general roundup. Shouldn't take us as long this week because obviously I wouldn't say it was an overly eventful week. Mind you saying that, there is an eventful game going on at the moment, as we've just alluded to, so that will for sure get our attention. But, you know, everything else generally went to script. So let's get the televised games out of the way first, starting at Man United Leicester. Man United obviously still lingering in that top four picture, but I would imagine with that one-all draw, that has to have removed him from the equation now, hasn't it?
Well, put it this way, earlier I had physio for my shoulder, and the physio, for some reason, I see this guy because, you know, he's a Man United fan and I shouldn't really see him, but he's, you know, he's a very charismatic, decent guy. He's very chatty. And I brought football into the conversation and he said, do you know what? I don't want to talk about it. I was just like, well, you know, I reluctantly talk about Man United, but it's even bittersweet. You know, it's far more sweet to when they've played crap and lost, you know, like everyone who likes football appreciates. But he genuinely didn't want to say a word about it. He said, yeah, I watched it. That's it. He was just fed up, completely fed up. And you think, well, yeah, if I was a Man United fan, I would be fed up. Not really much to say about it other than it was pretty shit. Did they play Pogba up front? Pogba and Fernandes up front when they've got obviously their star man from the academy on the bench?
How
does a team like that have no strikers other than Rashford?
Yeah, it is very odd. I mean, saying that, you know, I might be being a bit too harsh, but Man United are on 30 games tied with Spurs and there's 3 points between them. So I guess you can't rule them out just yet, especially with Arsenal currently being 2-0 down. Again, not intending to drop that in on purpose or anything. Cossie will keep a track of how many times I can allude to it without sounding like I'm being, you know, petulant or anything. But 51 and 54 as it stands. So I guess you can't rule them out. It's just the style of football, though, that you can't see getting them anywhere, isn't it?
So what style?
Well, exactly that. So, you know, I caught a bit of the game. Just happened to have it on Sky Go and monitor it. And at times it did look like that it was going to be a win for Man United, and then Leicester just upped the gear and off they went. But yeah, it's an odd one, and I'm sure that would have been down on their list of games that they had to win. Not got a bad two games next with Everton and Norwich, but then, you know, they've got an away game against Liverpool and an away game against Arsenal, which is probably where I can see their luck running out. I don't know. We've spoken about them a lot, what they need to do. And until they appoint a manager and sort out their situations that are ongoing with Rashford and other names that I won't mention, we don't really know where United are going. Leicester, on the other hand, though, I mean,
fair play to them. They were unlucky not to win that, to be honest. It was a foul on Varane, I'm not doubting that. However, like when watching it live, you think, what the hell has he done that for? And he just like rolled around on the floor and you think, oh, okay, even I can accept that. Yeah, that was a foul, fair play. But they had many decent chances, to be honest. James Maddison looked absolutely brilliant. You know, he has those games, and yeah, that they could probably walk away from that game thinking, do you know what? This is quite a shit Man United side that's spent like hundreds of millions of pounds, pay their players hundreds of thousands of pounds a week. And with that, we didn't actually win that. And Leicester aren't really doing anything this season, are they? So
Leicester are in their last five games are sixth, 10 points, which is tied with Man City. So that's not bad form for Leicester, especially considering probably what 5 games ago we were worried for Brendan Rodgers, you know, needing to up the ante and get his head together. It wasn't looking like things were going too well.
He's finally started to get to terms and get his players right when Jamie Vardy's not in the team. He's got to think about his age. He's got to think about his injury record, especially this season. And it's taken him, 5 months to think, do you know what? I can get the best out of Iheanacho. He obviously scored at the weekend. And he had a good performance. He's gradually becoming that player. I don't know if that says more about Iheanacho, his performances rather than Rodgers. But, you know, they've got to correspond, because Rodgers has got to understand that he needs to replace Vardy, which sometimes some would say that he's irreplaceable. But he also needs to find the best way of playing without him in that team.
As horrible as it sounds, Jamie Vardy being injured is probably the best way of solving the problem of not having Jamie Vardy, because you have to do it rather than take the approach of, I'll put him on the bench because I need to start learning how to play without him. They lose games. And then it's like, well, if you'd started fucking Vardy, you know, we would have won this game. So him being injured is almost a, it's a short-term, it's short-term pain, hopefully, for long-term gain. I think being able to drop him out is just the problem acknowledging you rather than you having to acknowledge the problem and then looking like an idiot when you fuck it up. I think in the long run, especially this season, if there was a time that Leicester were going to learn to do it, it's now while they're 10th, not pushing for Europe. Yes, they're new in Europa League. I mean, you could keep Vardy fit for the Europa League games. That might be his last bit of action for Leicester, and he goes out on a high if they win the cup. So, you know, as much as I don't wish an injury on anyone, but at the moment it's looking like the best form of a solution for Leicester. So probably use it to their advantage to try and figure out what they need to do. Bit of urgency for Brendan Rodgers at one point during the season. That's come to fruition and sorted itself out, thankfully for him. But a lot to ponder next season, I would imagine. We then go on to another game involving one of the top teams, Liverpool 2, Watford 0. Not much to say here. Again, Jota scores another header, which is incredible for the little guy. And yeah, Liverpool just taking care of business as you would expect.
Another game that Liverpool managed to drop a couple of players and rest a couple of players. Obviously, Gomez played right back. Jota's not really been starting for them recently. Obviously, Diaz didn't play either. And as you say, scored another header. What the hell? And he probably could have scored another two headers if you saw the game. He came so bloody close again. But the guy's on fire. You think, okay, he drops, makes him hungry, drop a couple of players, and all of a sudden, again, they're winning quite easily. I don't know what the hell Roy Hodgson was moaning about. Did you see him moan about the penalty? So basically, no. One of his players completely rugby tackled one of the Liverpool players, and Roy went absolutely mental.
Penalty itself. No, it was a penalty all day long.
Like, what the hell? Roy Hodgson after the game, right, went absolutely mental, saying, "Well, I don't know what VAR is for. Like, what's VAR looking at that for?" And it's just like, well, because he absolutely rugby tackled that. That surely turns around and says that's exactly what VAR for. Like,
well, no, it was appealing for it.
Well, okay then. Like, if someone punches someone like off camera and no one else sees other than the person who's getting punched, does that mean it shouldn't go to VAR because nobody saw it? It's like, come on, Roy. Like, you're starting to lose it a little bit, mate. If you start complaining about penalties being given like that, you think, really, mate? You can't rugby tackle someone in the box. The reason why no one really appealed for it at the time is because everyone was looking at the ball while someone was getting rugby tackled in the background. You think, well, you can say what you want about Liverpool getting penalties. That's as clear as you'll ever see one, mate. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, Liverpool, as I say, Liverpool, it takes just taking care of business. Both teams, you know, if you would expect would be taking care of those teams. West Ham 2, Everton 1. Saw Frank Lampard's face after Michael Keane got sent off. He was not a happy bunny. Didn't look like he knew how on earth he was going to resolve this problem. West Ham looking good again. Bearing in mind, this could have easily been a slip up, you know, with the Europa League around the corner. You know, panic starts to set in that players don't want to be missing that game. You know, things start
Genius
getting a little
goal.
Bit nervy, but.
Yeah, genius. Well taken. Like, the free kick was absolutely fantastic. 1-1, fair enough. Holgate wasn't supposed to be starting apart from a like injury.
Good goal as well from Holgate.
Very good goal. Richarlison showing again that he's not a top player, is he? He had a couple of golden chances in that, and you've got to take it when you're at the scrap. He's not up for a scrap relegation battle. He had such a golden chance. I don't know if you saw it. It's just thinking, really, mate, someone who thinks they're as good as what you think you are should be burying that. And Bowen's goal, I think he got a little bit of luck because obviously he sort of hit it into the ground, which then took it over the defender, if you saw. However, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt, thinking, well, yeah, that's the only way he could score that was on dinking it over the defender, and he did that. But yeah, fair play to him. And obviously Keane getting another red card for Everton. Discipline problems, but the fans still seem completely sold by Frank, saying it's not his fault, everything happened before he came, which you could possibly argue, but he's not exactly the man that you turn around and be like, do you know what, he's going to get these players playing. people were saying that, oh, we need a, like the manager's there to try and pump up the players. You think, well, isn't that 70, 80 grand a week that some of their players are earning enough to make them motivated to keep them going? Frank Lampard just seems to be slating them and probably in training, he's probably turning around and saying, do you remember how good I was as a player? Because it's all about the Frank Lampard, not being funny. But that's exactly why Gerrard's going to be a much better manager than Frank Lampard will ever be, because he's more of a team player than what it says about his career, really, doesn't it?
I mean, another team where you worry about, you know, not only have they got to get over this season if they do stay up, but I mean, you're looking at easy 7 players that need to be taken out of that starting 11 because they're just not good enough. So I'm not sure where the problem is. I mean, Calvert-Lewin doesn't look half the player. Richarlison, as you say, probably showing why he will never make the top 6 teams, just not good enough.
Was Calvert-Lewin ever really that good, or did he just have half a good season?
Another powerful patch player, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly.
Iwobi clearly not good enough. We've said that before. Defence, one of the worst defences, I think. Pickford, who can't do anything for club football but can do it all at international level. It's a really, really odd time. The moment you're signing players like Al Ghazi and Solomon Rondon, you're starting to think, are we setting ourselves up for a few years battling relegation? More questions over Dele Alli by Simon Jordan, I heard this week, just saying, what is he even doing? You see all them videos uploaded of Alli being welcomed by Frank Lampard to the training ground and all that kind of stuff. Like, he's cut his hair, ready for it. And the guy can't even get 10 games for Everton starting, which is terrible, because we were worried, when I say we, Spurs fans, were worried that we were going to let go of a diamond in the rough at that moment in time, whereby you look back and you go, if only we'd have just hang on. But clearly showing something's not right, and clearly showing grass is greener on the other side at the moment for Spurs, because moving on to them, they had a hell of a performance turning over a Newcastle side who, I tell you what, if they'd have hit this form a couple of weeks ago, there could have been squeaky bum time over there with Eddie Howe.
Kind of disappointed with it. Very disappointed with it. If this would have happened, as you say, a few months ago, we'd be thinking, right, here we go, Newcastle, big money boys. But again, who said it was a sticky opponent for you?
Oh, it's Cookie.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Like Palace have proven a sticky team for Arsenal, yeah?
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely not a sticky patch, that one. Surprised me, actually. I didn't expect it to go the way it did. Destroyed them would be an understatement. But
disappointed at 5, to be honest. It could have been 6, 7, 8.
Oh, Son had a great chance to slide it in. And there was a couple of moments, but we are looking ruthless at times, which is a great time to start, you know, going down that route, especially with the games we've got coming up, because, you know, the next game is Aston Villa, which is the other game that everyone said could be the sticky one in April. And if we turn them over, then you're thinking, hang on, you know, especially with Arsenal tonight at halftime being 2-0 down to Palace, it's looking good. It's looking good for Spurs at this moment in time. I will say that. Newcastle, on the other hand, as you say, if it had just been a couple of weeks ago, I mean, I've not seen a performance at the back like that in a long time from a couple of the teams at the bottom. It was bad.
That was the worry that we had with Eddie Howe going there, didn't we? And then all of a sudden he was like proving us wrong, making us look silly. Then it's just like, well, hang on a minute. A couple of good results here and there. I think any manager can really pick together a couple of results. I know you don't like to talk about necessarily the money that they have. However, a new manager coming in, a new atmosphere at the stadium, that builds players' confidence and changes everything about the club anyway. So was that impact, or was it Eddie Howe's impact? You just don't know until next season obviously kicks on, if Newcastle stay up, which, you know, we all expect it. But like you said, he had his good patch at the right time.
Spurs in fourth for the first time since September, obviously because of the game in hand, but looking like they could remain there after tonight's fixture if it carries on the way it's going. If Arsenal did I mean, the momentum could be with Spurs here because, as you say, I think you pointed this out, sometimes knowing what you have to do is more intimidating than just being the first to take care of business, isn't it? You know, if they score a penalty, you know you have to score the penalty. Spurs have kind of got that momentum. And I remember this with the Spurs-Leicester. It was always Leicester that played first, which then put Spurs under pressure because we knew what we had to do in the season that we are, you know, we couldn't catch them. They were phenomenal. But it seems to be, you know, if Arsenal had gone first, you think, I mean, see, hindsight's a wonderful thing, but you kind of get where I'm coming from. You know, they go to Palace thinking, right, boys, let's just do what we've been doing. Happy days. But because Spurs have won the game in such fashion, Arsenal know they can't afford to slip up tonight. And you just wonder now whether that pressure's getting to them because momentum's got to be with Spurs at the moment, isn't it?
Well, Arsenal have got an experienced squad which they wouldn't have had to deal with it before, as much as we have praised Arteta at times. You know, you're sort of like, well, that could be the inexperience and the nature of Arteta. That's just like, well, yeah, you're good to a certain point, but are you that good when there's pressure on, you know?
This could be where, to begin with, when we were talking about Spurs' January activity and we were all saying, it's not enough. But when you look at it now, not only have they ended up being absolute world beaters, Kulusevski and Bentancur at the moment. I couldn't fault them in the slightest. You know, I wouldn't drop them at all. This is where that experience comes into play, which is something that at the end of the day, Ben White doesn't have experience in knowing, you know, to him, he's probably getting really excited. He's probably getting really excited thinking, oh my God, I might play in the Champions League. Whereas Romero, Kulusevski and Bentancur could be sitting there going, I expect no less. It's the difference, isn't it? It's a mindset.
This is what we do. We win. We don't yeah, nearly
same
get
same with the manager. I've never heard a Spurs manager go, I'm not here for fourth. That's not what I was hired for. I wouldn't be here if that was my goal, to get fourth. That's my minimum expectation. And Ben Davies put out an interview where he said, he's created disturbance that's not been here for a long time. You know, he's created that uncertainty, but at the same time, not in a way that maybe Frank Lampard's doing at Everton, causing disruptions and stuff like that. But he's actually making it, you know, people are saying Ollie Skip was one of the Spurs' best midfielders this year. But Højbjerg and Bentancur are playing so well at the moment, they don't even know whether Skip will be allowed to just walk straight back in. That's the mentality a top four team needs. Something that Man United don't have as well. So,
and that's why Ollie Skip should have been at Norwich and we would have had a much better chance of survival than having Billy fucking Gilmore in centre mid.
He'd have been top 10 with Skip. But no, good time for Spurs at the moment anyway. You know, we'll probably lose next week and I'll be annoyed, but we'll see. But I didn't expect the result. We won't come to Palace Arsenal just yet because we will try and obviously catch them at the end of the game. I mean, we'll allude to it in different halves and then that way we're not talking about a long period of time. Half-time 2-0. Can you see Arsenal getting back in this? There's a chance, isn't there? You can, in a sense.
We've been made to look silly when it comes to stuff like this before. So an early goal, an early bad challenge, an early penalty, an early anything in the second half. However, like we just discussed, have they got that bullish mentality? Have they got that fight where they think, do you know what, we're going to get in Palace's faces, we're going to maybe start winding them up to start making the tackles against us around the dangerous areas, you know, perhaps like put the keeper under pressure, etc. But I don't think they've got it in them. I think Palace under Vieira, as Jason keeps banging on about, I think they've got enough experience and maturity in their game that Vieira's obviously changed and really sort of drilled into the players. I think they'll come out. If anything, it could end up 3-0 next goal. If it's 3-0, then that's it. That's going
to
finish
3-0. That's one thing. Arsenal, it's crazy to think that they're facing a team that is managed by their last real true shithouse player. Because it's the one thing that Arsenal have never been able to recapture, is it? All their players are just too nice or or just getting rid of him idiots sort of at the end of the day. They can't, or you've got Xhaka who's trying to be a shithouse, but the only person he shithouses is himself because he's an idiot.
How many times has he had to apologise online for his performance?
Which is not even that. That he just can't. There's being a shithouse and then there's being a really intelligent shithouse.
Yeah, that's the different thing. There's being a shithouse and someone who's shit and a shithouse, and that's him.
Yeah, yeah. Someone who knows when he's getting a yellow card, doesn't go two-footed when he's on a yellow card, you know, time and place for it. Someone that's really intelligent to know when to take the card, when not to. But yeah.
Maybe Xhaka's just not the brightest. He's not the sharpest tool in the box. Maybe
brightest tool in the box. But yeah, maybe this is an audition for Arsenal's future. Maybe Vieira might eventually bring that, but they could certainly do with that at the moment. We've reached the end of the first segment. Got through the games. Obviously, it was only four TV games other than the one that's on, and we will no doubt talk about that game at the end. So we've got to give ourselves a little bit of time to maybe, just in case there's an incredible story come the end. Obviously, we didn't have any predictions last week due to international football and King of the World. There's no Will of Wonder, just being me and you, Koss. There's no point. We might as well save it. I did think, however, that it might be a good time to just visit the potential teams we could be talking about next season and look at the Championship playoff picture just briefly for the next few minutes.
I like it.
Getting a little bit interesting over there. No one seems to want it. That's one way of putting it. Looking at it at the moment, if I just go from top down to, I don't know, let's say 10th, worst case, could be more involved, but give or take, starting to shape itself. Fulham top of the table, looking cert, I would say, to go up.
Bournemouth, no surprise there,
in second. Huddersfield, Luton, Borough, Blackburn in the playoff spots at the moment. Forest with three games in hand, however, in seventh. So, you know, good old Forest could be in with a chance, you would say.
God, I hope they are. I really want Forest back in the Premier League. Like I said, I've got family in Nottingham and I'd love it. I'd absolutely love it.
Yeah. And then you've got Sheffield United, QPR and Millwall.
West Brom is a weird one as well. Because
this is what I was going to come to. Can you believe West Brom and Stoke are currently in 12th and 13th when West Brom, no more than 10 games ago, were third?
It's ridiculous.
Because I remember saying, oh my God, having West Brom, Stoke in there with Bournemouth and Fulham is not the teams I want to come up. And now all of a sudden you're looking at it and West Brom are 12th towards the middle of the table. It's just an absolute shambles.
Losing at Birmingham at the weekend. Steve Bruce's manager.
West Brom are 22nd in the table in the last 15 games.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, from February all the way through to mid-December, West Brom only won one game, and that was against Peterborough. And in that time, they only drew two games. All the rest were losses. So that's how quickly they sunk. It is terrible. Not that I'm complaining.
No, I don't really care, obviously. But it's a ruthless league. Like, if you look at where Forest were at the start of the season under Chris Hughton.
Rooted at the bottom, I remember Jason's pun was.
Completely destroyed at the bottom. And then all of a sudden they get Cooper in as manager, who I really do rate. I think he was brilliant at Swansea. I think he's a very good manager, plays very, very sexy football. Forest would be dead and buried under Chris Hughton, but they'd be dead cert at the top if he started the season there. But as you say, they've got three games in hand over Blackburn. And what a playoffs it would be if it was Huddersfield, Luton, Forest and, Blackburn maybe, just for a bit of nostalgia.
Yeah, personally, I would Luton, Blackburn and Forest for sure. I'd take Huddersfield in their worst case if I had to, personally, I'd like to only see if Luton, Blackburn and Forest got in there. As long as it's one of Luton, Blackburn and Forest, I don't really mind. My ideal scenario would be Forest, just because, just for history reasons. Luton next, just for being such an incredible story. And Blackburn, again, just for a 90s nostalgia. Ideally, I'd take all three of them over the top two as well. Bournemouth from Fulham if I had the chance. So
yeah, unfortunately, that seems like that's already happened. It's very, that's the only reason why I'm not mentioning them.
I have no idea
how Todd Cantwell is doing at Bournemouth. Don't really care either, but it's sort of interesting to see if he actually has been playing or anything.
He was on the bench against Bristol City, played 11 minutes, yet to score a goal for Bournemouth in the Championship.
Some backwards Norwich fans might be turning around and like, yeah, but he's going to be in the Premier League next year, you know, that kind of bullshit. You think, well, he's done fuck all since he's been at Bournemouth and I can't see them signing him if he's only playing 11 minutes.
No assists either, so says a lot. Whereas Dominic Solanke, on the other hand, tearing it up.
Well, about time, isn't it? Not being funny. Yeah. They spent, what, £23 million on him? And it's taken him, three seasons to start scoring goals, but...
Yeah, 24 that's goals.
That's the plucky behind... old little Bournemouth spending £20-plus million pound on flops that have taken 3 years to actually do anything, but fair play to him.
Bournemouth. Absolutely.
People will soon forget, but like, oh, yeah, Dominic Solanke was a cheap sign, wasn't he? No, he wasn't. He was in his mid-20s, 20 millions. Plucky old Bournemouth, my arse.
See what happens for sure, and we'll keep a close eye on that as it develops throughout the season. So we come to the second segment, which, to be honest, you could say in some cases maybe had a little bit more going on than the first. It would be rude not to start at the bridge for what I was giving the most time on this show, for sure, because... Well, firstly, because it's you talking about Brentford. Secondly, because it's a result I couldn't have even thought of in my wildest dreams happening. Yeah, incredible scenes. I mean, Chelsea, the first goal looked like it was setting them off. I mean, what a strike. Rudiger from 40 yards.
Yeah, it was a huge goal, superb goal. Take nothing away from it. But when you're Chelsea... Football club playing against Brentford at home and you go 1-0 up, there should be no other result other than the Chelsea win.
Yeah, I mean, it got a bit alarming when it took a 40-yard strike for Chelsea to go 1-0 up in the first place because they just couldn't seem to break down Brentford. Yeah, I mean, it's a wonderful goal, though. Wonderful goal. To then see Brentford score 2 minutes later and then just absolutely destroy them. Like, it wasn't even
in
close.
Every single way.
They just absolutely rinsed them. I mean, they didn't have as much possession. I mean, we've said this before. Chelsea had 70% possession, got 21 goal attempts. Brentford, in the 29% possession that they had 17, four attempts less than Chelsea, who had 21 with 70%, goes to show you that it's all ball and no action. Because for Brentford to do that and tuck four of the six on target away says a lot. I mean, they've kept themselves up for sure now.
How good does Eriksen look as well? Again, that's the difference. Have a centre midfielder who can actually create, do something on the ball, assist, and we've got you know who in our midfield, so you know, not being funny, that's the difference, and fair play to him. I think I speak for the footballing world saying that it's so good to see him score, get assists, play well. You know, football won that day, and I think again I speak for a lot of fans with everything that's going on overseas. Fuck Chelsea in every single way, and fair play Brentford.
Well, this is a Chelsea team that everyone thought at the beginning of the season were for sure going to take Man City and Liverpool for a run. After 15 games, Man City and Liverpool sit on 38 points in the form table and Chelsea sit seventh on 26. You know, that is a massive, massive gap. I don't really know what the answer is here, but...
Well, I really hope the conclusion is that they're on their downward spiral in every single way. Every inch of my body, I hope that they continue to fall. I very much hope they were, because obviously it wasn't a massive distraction, unfortunately, because they pretended it wasn't happening and they were still praising their fucked up owner. But yeah, I really hope it's their fall from grace.
Do you think reality would hit Chelsea this season when they face Real Madrid, if Real Madrid then knock them out?
Potentially.
Yeah, I think so.
There's a lot of players out of contract. There's not unlike Chelsea to come in the last minute and just offer more money than the next clubs. However, there's a lot of teams that are after their want-away players now. And are they really going to want to stay there at the minute?
Well, we said, when was it? How many episodes ago would it have been now? Three? When we first announced the Chelsea sanctions, obviously, shocked us all. And we realised that Chelsea won't be able to buy players, renew contracts. And I remember there being a few accounts that turned around the, in quotations, in the know, and said, yeah, I wouldn't look into it too much. You know, eventually there'll be something that they'll do to sort of allow them to do that. Here we are, nearly a month on. Still no news as to whether Chelsea have got a chance of renewing contracts or anything like that. So it looks like we're going into the end of the season with Chelsea losing players and not being able to replace them. So with the form they're in and the distractions they've got with Europe, God knows. But for Brentford, 14th spot on 33 points, you know.
That's them okay now.
Yeah, I'd say 33 points is a marker.
I say it through gritted teeth, but you can't really... I think if you listen back at the podcast, I think you guys started to agree with me because they lost 9 out of 11. Any team that loses 9 out of 11, I think it might have even been worse than that at times, and it wasn't exactly... I don't think they won the other two games in those 11 games. That's not Premier League form. And it was frustrating hearing the whole, like, you know, they're doing really well. It's just like, look at their results. It's not very good. The manager's losing it. But again, the win against Norwich, that basically set them instead for a couple of wins here and there. And yeah, full credit to them. Like, absolutely 100% full credit to them.
Beat the teams around you, like Burnley and Norwich, as they did. And occasionally you might get that random result like they did against Chelsea, which is to be all. That's what Watford have been doing all season, getting that lucky win that we don't expect and then just occasionally picking up a few wins around them. It seems to be enough. But when you start drawing against teams that are above, just above you and below you, that's the problem. So, yeah, fair play to Brentford, looking like they're remaining in the league. And I don't think anyone will be too unhappy about that with some of the teams that could be potentially going down.
It's a proper club at the end of the day, sure. Isn't it? It's like, I'd much rather someone like Brentford who do things, I'd say, largely the right way. Obviously, I've got a personal vendetta against someone like Tony who slates the club and thinks he's Mr. Big Bollocks the whole time. However, if they can get rid of that distraction and, well, he didn't score at the weekend and he didn't have a 5-yard sitter or a penalty. So obviously he wasn't going to score, but fair play to the other players. And yeah, huge, huge credit to him.
Sure. We, in the midst of all this, had a West Midlands derby. Not the biggest one, but a derby nonetheless. Wolves Villa, a battle, you know, you could say in the middle of the table, but that's probably doing Wolves a bit of an unjust because I wouldn't say they're part of that. I think Wolves could be...
The fact that it wasn't even on telly sort of says a lot really about that game, doesn't it?
I think it sort of says a lot for the difference in scope between Wolves and Villa, to be honest. I think, if anything, that not being built up in the way that it usually is, especially considering usually Sky Sports would jump all over a fixture like that because, let's be honest, you haven't got Villa Birmingham, you haven't got Villa West Brom. So Wolves Villa is the only real West Midlands derby you can have in the league. And it landed at a 3 p.m. kickoff, didn't even get a mention, did it? So
crazy, really.
I think that goes to show you how far, not so much how far Villa have dropped, because I don't think Villa have dropped. They've remained where they probably deserve to be. But I think it shows how far Wolves have come, that they're actually bottom of the top pack rather than being top of the middle, because they are 12 points clear of the team below them, which is Crystal Palace. So, I mean, I never thought I'd look at a league table and see 13 points separating Wolves and Villa. That's an incredible madness. Feat, to be fair. That is incredible.
That's insane looking at it.
It is. And I know we're choking, but I'm sorry, but you can't, as much as I don't think it's ever going to happen, but you can't rule Wolves out of a European spot here. They're only 2 points off West Ham.
It's so strange. Looking at the performances that I've seen in person, I just thought, well, Wolves aren't that good. But if you look at their season as a whole, then all of a sudden they have that loss and you think, oh yeah, Wolves aren't as good as what people are saying. And then all of a sudden you look, well, 31 games, 41 points. The team below them, if Palace win, 30 games, 37 points. You think, well, actually, that's bloody good. That is deservedly so European chasing form. And yeah, where they are, it's just like, yeah, fair play to them. Considering they got a new manager, got rid of their goalkeeper that we were thinking, well, hang on a minute, that's careful what you wish for, guys. But it's been brilliant.
Do you know what it is? Again, Wolves haven't drawn a game since the 19th of December. So for every game they lose against Arsenal, against West Ham, against Palace, against Leeds, they then win games against Villa, Everton, Watford, Leicester, Spurs, as I very well know, Brentford, Southampton, Man United. They've not drawn a single game since the 19th of December, and that was against Chelsea, for Christ's sake. So,
which is not exactly a bad result, especially back in December.
No. So that is the difference. They've gone under the radar and kind of taken care of business without people even knowing. But all they'll talk about is Newcastle being so many games unbeaten, but five of them games might have been draws. So that's the difference. So fair play to Wolves. Really good result for them, as is any derby win. Now we go on to another game that's, I guess, not really much to say. Burnley, Man City. I do wonder whether that is the end of Burnley now. I mean, they've got Super Sunday, obviously, against your boys. Being a massive, massive game. I'm not sure whether it's a massive, massive game for Norwich as such, but I'm sure it's a massive game for Burnley.
You got mate, we've got this. We're staying up, mate.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
I think Spurs are winning the league in whatever world that is.
As long as we start Billy Gilmore so we don't have to spend as much money on his loan fee at the end of the season, I'm happy, to be honest. That's exactly what I want as a Norwich fan.
I mean, where does it leave? Where are you thinking? Is it too little too late? I mean, this is what we say about games in hand, isn't it? You know, it means shit.
We didn't think it meant shit at the time because we thought, oh, here we go. This is Sean Dyche. Why the hell did we rule them out? Even though they've played 17 games when other teams have played 22, 23. Then they won a couple and you think, oh, come on, Burnley have got this. We know exactly what Burnley are like. And then it was the Brentford game that I thought, well, hang on a minute, they're in trouble. They should have won that, really. They had a good few chances in that game when at nil-nil.
They haven't scored a goal in four games.
That's the difference, isn't it? They might turn around and say, oh, Chris with this, Chris with that. Well, he wasn't exactly scoring many goals at the start of the season. In my opinion, and your opinion as well, they replaced him with a better player.
Much better.
Who started off well. And then all of a sudden, it's just like, well, yeah, there's a reason why Burnley are down the bottom, regardless of playing fewer games at the time. But they've not exactly set the world alight since they've played those games in hand. And they're two games behind Watford, 1 point behind them. But again, games in hand, as you say, mean absolute shit if you're not going to win them or at least put in a decent performance and draw.
Well, they've got a massive game, haven't they, midweek, which wasn't there as of a week ago. The Everton rescheduled game landed in midweek, which is massive. So that could be a game that Burnley, you know, feel that they have to win. I mean, they have to win that if they want any chance, because if they win that and then they beat Norwich, for example, all of a sudden they're above Everton in the table. You know, so put them on 26 points on 30 games, which is 4 points clear of Watford. And then Everton have to win the other game, which, you know, is certainly not a given at the moment, especially with their run of fixtures. Man United, Leicester, Liverpool, Chelsea, Leicester, Brentford, Arsenal. That's Everton's games. And I think Jason even went as far as saying, I can't see him getting 3 points out of them games. So for Burnley, it's a massive...
In that case, yeah. But Burnley are staying up if that's the case.
I think honestly, I know it's a bit of a, you know, Sky Sports will hate me. They'd probably sack me on the spot if I was employed for them for saying this. But I would say the Burnley Everton game's bigger than Burnley Norwich. Just because of, you know, what it could do. If Burnley win that game against Everton, the momentum it gives them going into Norwich is massive. If they lose to Everton, I think it could be just a duff. Because I would go as game far over, as saying if it? Burnley lose to Everton, it's over. I can't see him staying up.
Agreed.
So another big game there. City, on the other hand, as we said with Liverpool, I mean, it was
again perfect
taking
example.
Care of business, isn't it?
Yeah, didn't really have to get out of second gear. It is what you expect. On paper, potentially a tricky fixture away at Burnley. However, good teams don't really make that tricky, do they? Maybe no. A few years ago, but now it's just sort of like, oh yeah, Man City 1-2-0, move on, you know what I mean?
One thing I would love to say is I'd love to go back to and find out what episode it was that I read out Jack Grealish's stats as 2 goals, 2 assists, and to look and still see he's on 2 goals, 2 assists today blows my mind. But he got a multi-million-pound deal with Gucci, so, you know, who's winning?
I was about to say, who's the real winner there?
Incredible, though, isn't it? Incredible.
Sorry, Jason.
He's where he is at this moment in time, and it's nothing's changed. It's madness to me. Big game at the weekend, of course. It's just a flip of a coin, isn't it?
Draw.
0-0. Like,
if there's any, yeah, if there's any team that, the thing is, you wouldn't be surprised if either team won 3-0, would you? Because City have done it before at the Etihad, Liverpool have done it before at the Etihad in a similar sort of fashion. So there's been some absolute belters. That they are the sort of proper rivals at the minute. They don't necessarily hate each other in a vile way like, say, Man United, Liverpool, etc. But they're never going to be as big rivals.
But
well,
these
honest,
are the games that create that, though, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah. That's these big more games. The appreciation, because, yeah, that's huge.
I think the other big thing is forgetting that before that game, both teams are in Champions League action.
Exactly. So they haven't exactly got the easiest prep this week, have they?
No. I think Liverpool are away to Benfica and Man City are at home to Atletico Madrid. So although Man City have got the home advantage, probably got the more difficult game. Do you know one thing I didn't realise? That in the last head-to-head matches, Man City are unbeaten against Liverpool in the last 4 games.
Mad when you think about it. Like, it doesn't seem like it, does it, at all? It really doesn't.
2-0, 4-1, 1-0, 4-0. So when Man City win, they win big. They win big.
That's exactly why I said I wouldn't be surprised if it was 3-0 Man City or 3-0 Liverpool. I'm not going to call it. I'm not going to go anywhere near that game for my predictions. I'm just going to sit back and enjoy it.
Well, let's hope no one's picked it, eh?
I'm guessing someone has. So yeah,
we shall see.
I think my camera's gone off. Yeah, I can't hear you, mate.
No, of course you can't. No. Right, we've got 2 more games then to discuss as we approach the last 20 minutes of the Crystal Palace Arsenal game, which is still, by the way, 2-0 Palace. Arsenal are knocking on the door. It's either going to end in a Palace counter-attack here for the goal, or Arsenal are going to get one and it's going to get a little bit nervy. But they are currently passing it around, as Arsenal do, in the penalty area, and to no avail. So we shall see how this one goes.
You say that. I've now come downstairs and I'm watching it live, so there's no lag on Sky Go.
And there could be.
Yep.
A penalty shout. There is a penalty shout.
Yep. And guess who's now stepping up? Obviously, they're trying to delay it as much as they can. Obviously, the shithouse goalkeeper is doing as usual. The referee's now talking to him. He's now going back on his line and Zaha's stepping up, who has only missed one out of his last 6, I think I saw, if not 5. Let's see if the keeper's done his homework, because he tends to go in the same direction.
Odegaard, what a terrible...
I can either tell you what happens live, or I can wait for you.
Oh, go for it. Go for it live, mate.
Are you sure? He's waiting. He's getting pissed off. He's now stepping up. Right-footed into the keeper's left. Zaha's right. Perfect penalty. 3-0
Wow, wow, wow.
Game over. fully deserved. Fair play, Palace. And Jace is currently very excited, I could imagine.
Unbelievable. I mean,
fair play, great penalty. You'll see it in a second.
What did you make of the actual penalty, the foul itself? I mean, it looked like he sweeped his leg, but when I was watching it on the replay, I mean, I wasn't actually sure if he clipped him. I couldn't tell. I was looking. I mean, you know me, I'd be more than happy to see the slightest of touches and say it was. But I kept looking and kept looking, and I was thinking, did he? But
again, it's one of those things that if it goes for your team, you'll take it. If it goes against your team, you're thinking, well, he didn't actually touch him, did he? And at the end of the day, when it's against Arsenal and you're a Spurs fan, he definitely touched him. He definitely was a penalty, and it's definitely game over, isn't it?
Without a doubt. At 2-0, you could see, you watch, it'll be 4-3. 4-3 to Palace, because it'll be 3-3, 96th minute, Palace to score the winner again.
You wait.
No, I mean, yeah, just cut to a shot of Arteta there looking a little bit
pissed.
Yeah. It's the experience, though, as we said. You know, they've got great talent, Smith Rowe, Saka, Odegaard, all of them. But do the boys know what to do when it matters most? And looking at this game, they probably don't. Back to the weekend's fixtures then. Only two more to go. Not the most exciting, mind you. One of them had an absolute weldie of a free kick from the man, the myth, the legend that is James Ward-Prowse.
Oh, fair play. I think it's like, just talk about the actual game itself. This had 1-1 or 2-2 written all over it. I can't see any other result other than a draw pre-game. So, but James Ward-Prowse, he's approaching Beckham's record. He'll get it, he'll smash it, and he'll, apart from Beckham's good looks, it will be, he should be put down as the greatest free kick taker of all time in the Premier League, potentially the world. But because he hasn't got the image as Beckham, and he hasn't got the Fabriziano like a South American wonder star. But it's just brilliant, isn't it?
It is. I mean, I saw a clip actually of the goal in the build up to the goal, and it was actually hilarious because, bearing in mind where James Ward-Prowse was, I mean, what was it, 25 yards out from an angle? There was a Leeds fan behind him in the crowd, sitting there like Southampton had a penalty. He had his hands in his over his eyes, like, oh no. It's like, this guy's 25 yards out from an angle, and it's the way Ward-Prowse steps up and just buries it like it's nothing. And you know, it is that moment, though. I mean, how much are those free kicks worth to a club? Well, you know, we talk about value, and at the end of the day, Would you not like to have a player like that, where every time he steps over the ball, your club is shitting itself? Because not only are they shitting themselves at the free kick, they're shitting themselves when you're breaking an attack, worried they're going to give you a free kick. And what does that do? Imagine you're counter-attacking. Do they let you run, or do they take you out?
Going back a few years, obviously, to the Rory Delap days, I think I remember a game when it was Stoke versus West Brom at West Brom at the Hawthorns. And one of their players was about to clear it upfield for a throw-in. And then he just looked, saw that obviously Delap was about, and was just like, you know what, I'm kicking it out for a corner. And he genuinely kicked it out for a corner over a throw-in, which you'd have thought, you'd laugh if anyone actually described that to you. You're thinking, really? But Rory Delap's throw-ins were that integral and that, they were a killer. But
yep,
as a dead ball specialist, like you say, what do? You don't hack anyone down. You don't do a professional foul, because anywhere from the sounds of it or from the looks of it, anywhere between, say, 18 yards and 40 yards we've seen in this season with a different technique like knuckleball, you can do it all. You can literally do it all.
Yep, no, absolutely. It is one of those where at the moment you think, if you give him a free kick, it could be, you know, the worst decision you make. But what do?
Last season, he scored two in one game against Villa. How many times has that happened ever?
Yeah. No, the guy's incredible. If he doesn't get a move to a top eight club, at least,
Well, get him on that plane as well. Get him on that plane.
Imagine, you know, you're 2-1 down and you've got 15 minutes to go even, and you need someone to just be, if you're facing someone that's shithousing you, you know, and giving you free kicks left, right and centre, and you've got someone that can deliver a ball like that or put it in the corner like he can, you've got to have him there. He's ammunition that not many international teams will have, or clubs for that respect, should I say. So absolutely needs to be there. He would be for sure not just a last thought either. He would be within the first 15 names that you put on there. Bit of a nothing game in the sense that, I mean, it doesn't feel like that long ago we were saying about Bielsa taking down a sinking ship, but
God, I mean, rest his soul.
God, yeah, I mean, I don't get over it. Oh, no, absolutely. Leeds 31, gains 30 points. They're only 3 points off Brentford, and we said Brentford are safe. Would you say Leeds are?
Not necessarily because they're safe because of what they do, but just because of what the teams around them are going to do, to be honest. I personally don't think they're going down. However, I was adamant Brentford was still going down even after last week. but yeah, the teams around them, you could probably turn around and say that if they win one and draw one, that puts them on 34 points. And if we're saying 33 points of the marker, it's all down to what Everton and Watford, well, and Burnley obviously do as well. Everton, Watford, Burnley, Norwich. It's going to be 3 out of 4 of them, from the looks of it, personally.
Yeah, looking at it, I think Leeds are safe now. I can't see them not getting that one final win or at least 3 draws somewhere along
still
the line.
Still mental. We're talking about Everton in a relegation scrap, considering the amount of money they've spent, sackings. Oh, God. But yeah.
From a footballing perspective, you know, Everton's story is much more worthy of going down, you know, just because of what they've done. I think Leeds was more a bit of a laughing stock, wasn't it? Just because the manager that they had was applauded for being shit, basically. Yeah. But now they've got Jesse March. It's amazing how one person changes the club's identity. Because like Everton, I kind of wanted Rafa to keep them up, just to rub it in their faces. That's Whereas so now it's the so other true. Way around. I don't mind seeing Lampard go down. Because it's a case of similar to Newcastle before, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Whereas Leeds, on the other hand, I kind of like the idea of a young manager as such.
American manager as well.
Yeah.
To slate.
Doing something different, which, you know, no one expects. So I'd like to think that he might do the business, but we'll see. As for Southampton, pretty much where everyone thought they'd be. Not to say that they can't finish in the top 10, to be honest. If they pick up a couple of other wins, you know, they're in the pack with Leicester, Villa and Palace. So we shall see. Now we come to the most exciting game of the weekend.
Here's where the edit comes with the snore.
It was a game of headers and volleys, wasn't it? Just at one end.
I think now headers and volleys are much, much, much more exciting than that.
Well, I mean, shame Jason weren't here because we, you know, usually we'd have the
Brighton, right?
or it would, you know, it would start with
well
with his little intro.
Simon, are you listening?
You seagull loving wankers, as he would say. But he's not here, and I'm sure he would have had a lot to say because he was very vocal on Twitter at how hilarious it was that Brighton had almost 30 shots and no and no goals, including a missed penalty, which was horrendous, by the way.
Terrible.
I'll leave you to give us a bit of an insight of the game, the snooze fest, as if you didn't fall asleep.
I'm falling asleep thinking about it, to be honest. It was quite funny, really, because Tim Krul, it's his birthday, and as everyone knows, I absolutely love Tim Krul. He's one of the players that I hope we keep. One of the only players that I absolutely love in this Norwich team. And he was a bit of a shithouse during the penalty. Didn't have to do anything, to be honest, because Mopé couldn't hit a barn door. Obviously, they were the better team from start to finish. However, they just can't score. And do I care? Not really. Does it mean anything to us whatsoever? No. However, again, it was quite funny on our social media that we tweeted and Facebooked that Tim Krul doing Tim Krul things, what, making about 30 saves in a game and keeping us in it? Because at the end of the day, that's exactly what he did for us. But to be honest, I haven't really got much to say about the game. We weren't setting the world alight, unsurprisingly. Yeah, I can't really say anything. It's just a bit one of those things that you just want this season to be over now, and Brighton probably a bit kicking themselves that they didn't beat us. But at the end of the day, Tim Krul was very good that game. Unfortunately, he had to be. And
great save, wasn't it? Fantastic save.
Superb save. Like, but yeah, that's all I can say. I wasn't excited. I was at work, like, sort of keeping an eye on the game as much as I could. Didn't really care that we drew. It was good that we got a clean sheet. But again, I'm not excited. I'm not even slightly excited. I'll look forward to seeing the boys on Sunday against Burnley, but only because I like going to football matches and like watching live football. Nothing to do with thinking that we're going to win, wanting us to really win. It's just one of those things, isn't it?
Let's do Jason some justice here, and let's keep up the momentum, because since this became a talking point, this Brighton Palace nonsense, Brighton have gone, and I think I alluded to this a couple of weeks ago, how if the tables were turned and this was on other ends of the season, this form, I don't think Potter would be in a job. They are bottom after 10 games, 6 points in 10. That's worse than Everton.
Come on, man. Like, we were talking about him potentially having the Arsenal job because he was looking so good. And like, I think we all fell for it, didn't we? We really did.
Massively.
But that is poor, man. I mean,
that is horrendous.
Anyone who doesn't beat Norwich at home deserve to be criticised big time.
I mean, all eyes have got to be on it, for sure, as to what this means for Brighton. Because they are doing the equivalent of Southampton last season, aren't they? We spoke about Southampton being that team. How Brighton are 13th still shows how good their start of the season was. You know, Jason laughs about it, how now it sounds ridiculous. And, you know, I'm going to play that clip of Nigel Farage.
You all laughed at me. Well, I have to say, you're not laughing now, are you?
Because Jason rightly said at the beginning how it was laughable that Brighton thought they'd get European football with the form that they were in.
Fair play to Jason.
And here they are now, 3 points clear of Brighton, meaning our meal looks like me and you are putting some funds together for Jason.
He deserves his scallop starter and his creme brulee dessert with a rare
Sauvignon Blanc, yeah, as he says.
Sauvignon Blanc and his filet mignon for mains. He deserves it.
And he will. No doubt he will be lapping that up. But at the end of the day, Brighton fans, there's only one team to blame, and it's your own. I'm sorry, boys, but...
And Seagull Simon.
Oh, and Seagull Simon for being such a dick. Because ever since you got out of your pram, Sunshine, the sun has gone in, hasn't it? Eh? The Brighton coast has got very wet and windy down there. Yeah, it's not looking very good at all. And well, I guess we'll be sitting here thinking, what does this mean going into next season? Because clearly, Potter has not got the team capable of elevating themselves to the next level. So you kind of sit there and wonder, if a team comes knocking for Graham Potter, does he jump ship? And is he fortunate enough to jump ship now?
Exactly. Has he really got the pedigree? You could probably turn around as anyone who hires him could probably turn around and be like, yeah, but he never really had a striker. And that could be his justification. Well, maybe their justification to get him as manager if it's a bigger team than Brighton. But on the flip side of that, surely fans would be turning around saying, look at the second half of the season. They were an absolute shambles. And it's not like they haven't had money. Like, how much wages is Mopay and Welbeck are on?
And looking at it, I mean, you wonder whether Graham Potter has missed the boat. I mean, you think of the managerial merry-go-round we had this season. And I'm looking now going, Arsenal aren't going to let go of Arteta, not like we were thinking at the beginning of the season when it was looking a little bit ropey. West Ham have got Moyes. Man United ain't going to entertain Potter when they've got other managers on the table. Wolves have got their own. Palace looks solid with Vieira, and let's be honest, he would go there anyway. Brendan Rodgers seems to have sort of recuperated at Leicester, and you can't see that happening. Villa have got a long-term project. Southampton, unless Hudson-Hoodle decides to retire early, as he says he will. All the other teams are below him, and even them. Newcastle, new manager. Leeds, new manager. Everton could be going down, new manager. Watford, he's not going to take over anyone below him. So I think your boat's gone, mate. I really don't know what the next step is for him right now. Maybe it's Chelsea because they need someone with lower wages.
I think he's got more self-respect.
As Jason says, Brighton and Chelsea wank each other off anyway, don't they? So maybe they've got a partnership in play there. I think
him as a person has got more respect than going to a team like Chelsea, though. I've got more respect than two Graham Potter than that.
Yeah, maybe. But who knows? We'll see. We'll let Jason, the expert, be the one to discuss that in more detail, as we love hearing it. Well, we come to the final talking point, which is obviously the summary of this Crystal Palace 3 Arsenal 0 result cost. I said it would either be one more goal for Palace or it would end up being, you know, a comeback. I'm not sure where this leaves Arsenal, you know.
This is a result for Spurs fans to be watching, thinking, here we fucking go, boys. Here
yeah, we absolutely. Because this is that bottle job mentality that we said Arsenal could have, you know, that nervousness where they just think, shit, we might not have it.
And what happens now? The press will start talking about it. Young players, inexperienced manager who's a little bit deluded at times. That's when he's going to start earning his money because they've got to win their next game.
Absolutely.
They've got a perfect game for it, to be fair. However, you know, imagine.
Yeah,
imagine
I mean, Brighton, you would say, is a game. I mean, this is
a Cookie perfect said, game for him, really. Perfect game
it
for
It is. Him. I mean, Cookie said Arsenal would get 12 points. He said it would be a draw against Palace, and it was far from it. He said they'd beat Brighton, beat Southampton, and then hopefully get a result somewhere in between Chelsea, Man United, West Ham to get them near the 12 points. Well, that's 1 point dropped in his books already. It depends, really. Spurs need to, let's be honest, follow this up with a Villa win. Otherwise, there's no point talking about it. For Palace, however, I mean, you've got to be in dreamland, don't you? The fact that you are top of that pack. You are now the team that are 12 points behind Wolves.
Yeah, top of that mini league. And before the start of the season, Palace fans would have probably bitten your hand off. I think Jason, especially, would have just taken the trophy between them and Brighton, who was going to finish above each other. And especially at the start of the season when Brighton were really good, it must have been really satisfying for them. But fair play, they didn't think they were ever going to go down. But people were talking about that in the same breath because of the massive overhaul that Vieira had to do. So nothing but credit to him.
And the players look happy as well.
They
walk up to Vieira and they look like they're in awe.
Oh, wouldn't you be?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't, no. I hate the guy. But I can see what it means to players there. You know, they're all in their 20s. You're walking up to someone that could potentially be your idol or someone that
been there, done that, got the T-shirt.
Absolutely.
Beast of a player, one of the best players ever to have played in the Premier League.
Easy. Probably one of, if not the best central defensive midfielder I've witnessed. Fair play. I mean, it's certainly blown the top four open now. You do start to wonder what this means. So, yeah, it's going to be a few nervy weeks, I'd say, for Arsenal and Spurs.
It's the potential knock-on effect, isn't it?
So we reached the end of the two segments and we come to our beloved predictions. Quite a eventful few games, I'd say. You know, there's a lot of big slippery games in there that could make a massive, massive difference to the points total come the end of the season, that's for sure. So, let's get this up and running, shall we? Firstly, just to give you a heads up, we have got Cookie and Jason's predictions in our hands, so we do know exactly what their scores were. And we've got a bit of a bonus game, because Burnley-Everton has been rescheduled to this week, and we'd already predicted that when cancellations happened. So, just to read them out, we've got Burnley 1, Everton 2 from Jason, Burnley 2, Everton 1 from Cookie, Burnley 2, Everton 1 from Scott, being me, and Burnley 1, Everton 1 from Cossie. That's looking pretty good, that 1-0.
I think
you're happy with that, aren't you? Yeah,
yeah.
I feel happy that I've got Burnley winning, not Everton, to be honest.
100%.
So that is a massive, massive one. And do you know what I'm going to do just to blow that wide open? I'm going to give 6 points to someone that gets the correct score on that one. Just because it could make a world of difference. Right, the games then. Koss, what is your game?
Watford versus Leeds.
It's Watford Leeds, is it? Okay. And what is your score?
I'm going to go 2-2.
And I understand you've got Jason's score?
Jason's score is 2-1 Watford.
Interesting. I'm going to go 2-1 Leeds. And that has also been matched by Cookie, who also said 2-1 Leeds.
Interesting.
Yeah. Jason's game was Tottenham Aston Villa.
Oh.
Jason threw a spanner in the works and said Spurs would beat Villa 3-1. Cookie being Cookie said it would be a 1-0 draw.
Do you know what? It's at White Hart Lane there, or the Tottenham Hotspur.
Yeah.
I think it's got to be a home win, isn't it? It really needs to be. If you don't win that, that is sort of like, oh, for fuck's sake, surely I'll be fuming. But again, the Wolves result.
Yeah, it's just...
sort of gives you the hangover, doesn't it? But yeah, you've got to win that 2-1.
Funny that, because you've said exactly the same score as I did. I said it would be a 2-1 win as well. Cookie's fixture. Cookie went with Everton Man United and said it would be, surprisingly, a 2-2 draw.
Traditionally, Everton have always done well.
Been up for a Man United game, haven't they?
Exactly. Like the early kickoff is always on telly. It seems to be that big game where... But again, I think Lampard is an absolute fraud. So I think 1-0 narrow win to Manchester United.
Yeah, me and Jason both said it would be 2-1 Man United. And the final decision for my game, it had to be, didn't it? Man City, Liverpool.
God. Evil, 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 evil.
Jason threw out a 3-1 win for Liverpool.
Right.
Cookie said he thinks the game will be 2-1 Liverpool.
Wow, that's what. Yeah, I'm gonna go with my heart, and I think
of course
it's gonna be a 2-0 to Liverpool.
Not even a goal.
Nope. Fuck them.
I'm gonna say, just to be different, I'm gonna say 2-1 City.
I'd have lost respect for you if you would have sat on the fence there.
If I'd have sat on the fence and gone with the result that I most likely thought it would be, yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Same. Do it.
We've got a follow-up tradition, Koss, because we need to do our who's up or down, one move. Now, I'm going to move Spurs from 6th to 5th just to get them into a position whereby if I think Arsenal are going to bottle it with their next few games that they've got. I've got time to move them.
I'm going to do exactly the same. I'm going to put Spurs from 6th to 5th, replacing West Ham, which is what I had at the time.
I had Man United there myself, so I mean,
I've got Man United in 7th at the minute.
I've got them in 6th. I think the West Ham Europa League could make a difference to them, to be honest. Okay, so we both moved Spurs from 6th to 5th. Cool. Jason and Cookie will have to adjust theirs when they're next on the show somehow. Episode 44 is done. Pleasure to run the show with you, my friend. We should have, for sure, Jason back. I don't know if Cookie is back from Florida then. I'm assuming not. So we might have to wait two more weeks until we get the chance to give him this grilling, but by that time, you know, it could be back on Arsenal's favour, who knows, but...
Or they could be sick.
Of course, they could be, yes. But no, that is everything for this week's episode, and we will be back next week and seeing exactly where the Premier League table lies. It will, I'm sure, be a massive talking point with some of the games that are up for discussion, including that super, super Sunday game between Man City and Liverpool. Until next time, we will see you all later.
Thank you for listening to Total Football Debate Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this episode. It would mean the world to us if you could spread the word regarding our show and leave us a rating so we know how we're doing. Also, please, please, please interact with us on social media, especially on Twitter at TFDebate, where we'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions on any of the topics we discuss each week. You never know, we may even get you on the show to say hello. Thanks again for listening and keep an ear out for the next episode.